On the go? Take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron.
410, if you missed our code word, you got a text here. Package, P-A-C-K-A-G-E. Good luck. 410 now, chatting a lot about food this afternoon. We'll get to some more of your texts. Seem to have hit on something here with that. Foods kind of that you hate but everybody else loves. Not a lot of them here. Mine was popcorn, just to give an example, but oh boy. Lots of wars being started on this text board here this afternoon. But kind of sticking, similar vein in food. China says that it successfully cloned three highly productive super cows. That's what they're calling them. They can produce an unusually high amount of milk. What does this mean? Joining us to chat about that is CTV science and technology specialist. He is Dan Riskin. Dan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I love anytime there's super cows involved. I have to talk about it. Yeah. We got to get in there.
How can you not click on this after reading that? Is the other kind of aspect here? But what exactly is going on here? So first of all, we've talked about kind of the ethics of cloning and animals and stuff like that before. But just when it comes to what China's announcing here, what are these super cows supposed to be doing?
Well, I mean, really, it fits into sort of this geopolitical issue that China right now imports most of their cows. And so they would like to be less dependent on imports, more self-sustaining that way. They eat a lot of meat in that country. And so it's huge business. And so, you know, when you have a bunch of cattle that produce milk, some of them produce more than others, right? And so you have this distribution. And so what artificial selection, the name of the game is you pick the cows that make the most milk and you let them breed. And then hopefully their offspring have some genes that they got from their parents that make them into big milk producers. But as genetic technologies move forward, we can kind of work a little bit faster and a little bit more cleanly. If we know the exact genes that are involved with milk production, we could, you know, snip those out of one cow and put them into an embryo and then have the new embryo make more milk. That's one scenario. Or if you have a cow you really like, you can just clone it and then have other cows born that have the same DNA as that first one. And hopefully they'll come out the same. And, you know, genetics is a big part of what makes an animal look the way it does, but environment plays a part too. And you don't always get exactly what you signed up for when you get a clone. It's not like it repeats the life of the first one. There may be differences, but they've got a couple of cows that really impress them in terms of their milk production. And the argument they make is that you don't really know how much milk a cow is going to make until it gets toward the end of its life. And you look back at all the milk it made, and by then they're kind of too old for normal breeding. So what China has done has taken three of these exceptionally big production cows that make like an extra 70% more milk than a normal cow. And just let me say, like a normal dairy cow makes a ton of milk already, right? So 70% more than the normal. And they've taken these cows and they've cloned them and they've successfully birthed them. And they've got these three calves that are growing up and they're optimistic that this is the way of the future for China and its milk production.
And looking at some of the numbers, you know, the numbers that they're putting out are almost, you know, two times the amount of milk of an average cow in the U.S. That's how they're kind of comparing it. I guess, what does that mean for, I guess, supply? Is that good news for consumers when it means that they can, I guess, count on more regular supply of something like milk?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, if everything works fine, great. You know, but anytime you're tinkering, you might get unexpected results. And so sometimes a clone might have attributes that you don't like very much. And so, you know, one famous example that everybody goes to is the Irish potato famine, right? Where they found a kind of potato that was really, really great. And so instead of having a variety of potatoes in all the different gardens, everybody was growing clones of this same strain of potato all across Ireland. And then when a blight arrived and started killing those potatoes, there wasn't the genetic diversity to be robust as a population against it. So every single potato was just as vulnerable as its neighbors and they all died. So maybe they all survived the other disease that almost got them, but they all died when that one came and then everybody got, you know, there was a famine and it was terrible for everybody. So with cows, you know, it's great to clone some. And I like what I'm seeing here, that they're taking multiple individuals that fit their criteria and cloning multiple individuals. individuals. But what you don't want to have is a farm of clones, because then all it takes is this one funny flu strain that goes through and just wipes out your entire farm, or maybe some other aspect that isn't what you're looking for. So sometimes you get not exactly what you bargained for. Diversity really does have a benefit. And it's not always good to pick the best one and think that if it's a monoculture of just that one, it's going to be better.
And I think everybody kind of more in tune than perhaps usual the last few years of just how, you know, deadly viruses can be and their impacts and things like that. But I don't, when we're looking at this, it does kind of seem futuristic as well. The thought of, you know, these cloned cows, I guess. Is there any kind of, I guess, ethical concerns raised for you, at least, when looking at some of these, you know, man-made clones, I guess we'll call them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, the use of clones doesn't freak me out too much. The factory farming, you know, is an issue, and the threat of disease that can happen in those factory farms and the way they can become breeding grounds for things like swine flu, avian flu, to mutate and adapt to a population of animals that are kept in these conditions that are just perfect for a virus, which then can trickle out to people. So, you know, there are lots of reasons to worry about factory farming. I don't think cloning is what really trips me up. But I have to say, anytime I think about cloning farm animals, I'm reminded of one of the best stories I've ever heard. And it was on a podcast called This American Life. It's episode 291, if anyone ever wants to go fishing for it. But it's the story of a bull named Chance. It was the gentlest, most loving bull, and they could trust this thing with any kid. And it was just, the kids would sit on it. They even had it on the Letterman show. It was this huge bull with giant horns, and they loved it so much. And then when it died, they cloned it, expecting that its clone would have those same attributes. And it was the opposite. The baby clone was so violent that it actually, and they caught this on tape, that they've got tape of the owner getting gored by this thing, and he actually was very badly injured to his genitals because of the horns of this clone. And so the first bull was called Chance. They called the second one Second Chance. But it's just an amazing story, and really drives home the fact that you don't always get exactly what you're expecting when you get a clone. Not, you know, just like identical twins can be very different, clones can also be very different. So I don't know that anybody's going to get gored by these super cows in China, but I just, you know, just never count on getting what you expect when it comes to biological organisms.
Yeah, what a perfect antidote to kind of sum everything up there, but also just a flag to This American Life. What a great show, eh?
Oh, it is. It is. They tell great stories. But that one, I just, my jaw was on the floor through that whole thing. And it really does just drive home the fact that cloning, you know, on paper, it all looks so simple. But once you bring it into the real world, you get unexpected answers all the time. And that's part of what makes biology beautiful.
Beautiful and scary. Beautifully scary. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
417. Thanks so much for your time, Dana. I really appreciate it this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you.
Dan Riskin is CTV's science and technology specialist, chatting about some super cows, three of them that have been cloned in China. Fascinating stuff. Keep the text coming. 580-580. Tweet us at CFRA Ottawa.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
22. Welcome back. This is Ottawa Now. I'm Andrew Princeton. Keep those texts coming. I've been getting a lot of texts. What foods do you hate that everyone loves? This is our Confession Thursday topic with Matt Scooby as well. A lot of good ones. Keep those coming. 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. We'll get to those a little bit later. But I guess sticking on the theme of food, it will soon cost you more to buy milk at the grocery store or the corner store. 2.2% increase in the farm gate price charged by dairy farmers. So it's the third price hike in a year for the dairy industry. It's leaving consumers very frustrated, as you are many of them, so you know. But Sylvain Charlebois is the director of Dalhousie University's Agri-Food Analytics Lab. He spoke on Ottawa at Work this morning with Patricia Bull about this. Patricia asking, you know, this was not good news. Yet another price increase.
A third one in a year. Yeah. So it's almost 14% in a year, which is higher than the actual food inflation rate. So it's great if you're a dairy farmer, but if you're a consumer, it's a problem. Milk is a favorite staple. A lot of Canadians drink milk and use milk on a regular basis. But right now, what we're seeing in Canada is a reduction in milk consumption per capita over the years. But what's even worse is that even dairy products, demand for dairy products is actually dropping as well, except for perhaps cheese. Mm. Cheese is stable. It's not growing. It's stable. But for everything else, yogurt, butter, all these products that are actually getting more expensive, people are just walking away.
Walking away because of price, do you think, or because there are quite a few alternatives to traditional dairy out there now?
Yeah, and some alternatives are actually also expensive, but people are just saying, you know what? Yeah, price is an issue, but I'm concerned about, say, animal welfare. I'm concerned about the environment. And yeah, the price itself is giving a new excuse to consumers to reconsider their relationship with dairy. And that's a big problem. So dairy, with all these increases, and again, this is really a product of supply management. We set prices based on the cost of production, and that's it. So we make sure that farmers make a good living. But at the end of the day, with three increases in a year, dairy is pricing itself out of the market.
And what is behind those price increases? Why is it happening?
Well, we have no idea. That's the problem. The Canadian Dairy Commission, which is a Crown corporation located in your city, Ottawa, its job is to actually use a pricing formula to set a fair price for farmers. Okay, so every year they survey dairy farmers across the country, and they come up with a price that will allow farmers to pay their bills. The problem that we've seen in recent years is that there's no transparency. We have no idea where these percentages are coming from. They say it's costing more to heat barns, it's costing more to feed animals, but we don't know for sure. There was a leaked document last summer that suggested that the cost to produce milk actually dropped between 2020 and 2021, while farm gate prices did go up. So you got to wonder what's going on here. And we've always asked for more transparency coming from the CDC, because after all, the Canadian Dairy Commission is a Crown corporation which belongs to all Canadians.
And with these price increases, as you suggested earlier, if you give consumers an excuse, as you say, to re-examine their relationship with dairy, there's probably a very good chance that they never come back once they abandon
it. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know about your household, but our household is hybrid. We actually buy milk and we buy oat milk now. And so oat milk, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty good, actually. Coffee, by the way.
That's what makes a hybrid household. I did not know. Okay.
Well, I call it a hybrid. I don't know how you call it, but I guess we're hedging.
Yeah, that's something for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And so, but let's face it. I mean, when you look at oat milk, soya milk, and almond milk, they're actually now cheaper than milk. Mm. It's cheaper. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a hybrid household too. I like the real thing, the 1%, but my daughters like the oat and the almond and all the other varieties.
The younger generation, that's exactly where I'm getting at. The younger generations, the millennials and Generation Z, they're looking at animal protein very differently. A lot of them just couldn't care less about dairy. And by the way, since 2019, our food guide doesn't have milk as a drink of choice. It's water. So that guide is being institutionalized right now with kids. And once they leave school, well, milk is just going to be like a drink.
Oh. I'm not surprised that you say cheese is holding its own. I'm actually maybe a little bit surprised that that consumption is not going up. It feels like everywhere you go, there's a charcuterie board on the table when you arrive now. So cheese, how is it doing price-wise if it's holding its own in terms of people's shopping habits anyway? What about prices around cheese specifically?
Well, prices are up about at the same rate as inflation. But the problem that we have in Canada is we actually have signed major trade deals to allow more cheese into the market, making our prices more competitive, I guess, or allowing consumers to have access to more better cheese, I guess, or a more affordable cheese. But what has happened is that import quotas were given to companies in Canada that had no intention to actually import more competitive products. Dairy processors, for example, which carry their own cheese brands. And so we've actually seen very little competitive products into the Canadian marketplace, which hasn't put pressure on prices in the end. And that's why the United States is actually disputing Canada for a second time in 12 months.
Okay, and just on the dairy thing, I have a couple of people texting in. Someone saying, costs are up for the dairy farmer like everyone else. Diesel, fertilizer, feed, it's all up. I mean, I guess that could be a factor, Sylvain.
So what I said is that between 2020 and 2021, costs drop according to the CDC's analysis, not my own analysis.
Okay.
Now, don't forget, there are things, yeah, feed has gone up, but there are things that are dropping. If you visited a dairy farm in recent years, you would see a farmer in a computer room. It's incredible. So labor is less costly now. Some of these farms are incredible. They're super clean, very modern. Cows are milk when they want to. It's incredible. But at the end of the day, when you actually see how farms are operated, it's actually costing less per hectoliter. So the farmer that probably send you a text is a farmer that has invested in his farm, and he's probably seeing his or her fees going up, costs going up, while on average, with the survey, the national survey that the CDC has actually ran, costs are actually going down.
So food professor Sylvain Charlebois at Dalhousie University speaking on Ottawa Work earlier today after another price increase, 2.2% when it comes to dairy products, milk. 4:30, time for the news. We'll be right back here. This is Ottawa Now. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Christy Carroll.
Join the conversation on Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron. Text 580-580 right now.
Recent increases to recipients of Ontario's Disability Support Program, aren't all they're chalked up to be, according to many advocates. The changes did include allowing ODSB residents or recipients to earn $1,000 from working. That was up from $200 previously. Without having that money rolled back, so you could earn $1,000 a month, you didn't have to worry about that being taken off, up from $200 recently. But 95% of ODSB recipients will see no change to their monthly income as a result of this. Now, joining us to chat about that is John Reddins. He's a local advocate here in Ottawa and also an ODSP recipient. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you'll remember at the time, right, there was, lots of people were celebrating the move, the changes to the system from the provincial government. But, you know, in the intervening months since, I guess, how have you seen this play out?
How has it played out is that the 95% of folks won't be eligible for this kind of thing. I'm fortunate enough that I am one of the ones qualified for it. It will help me out quite a bit because normally I'm clawed back right after the 300 mark, and it's going to be beneficial to me in the long run. But in the long run, they're expecting that more people with disabilities will be encouraged to go to work with this incentive. Even the opposition said that, and it's not right. There are increasing pressures to inflation that are happening, as we heard in the news lately, for dairy products, and it's this compounding the issue. The problem is we need to double the amount because most people with disabilities can't work, and they should be rewarded as well.
And just in terms of, you know, some of the levels of income, we saw an increase to the base level of income, but just kind of giving everybody a sense of what that base level of income is and just, you know, you mentioned inflation pressures we've all been facing, how far that can go for a monthly, you know, for all your bills.
Well, look, my rent is about $1,245.74. It just went on to the rate increase with the Ford government introduced. And basically, my wife, our basic needs. She's on an Ontario disability as well. Our basic needs alone is $1,173. So it's kind of it defeats the purpose.
Yeah, that's an entire one of your salaries, right? In terms of what you receive for ODSB.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's for me and my wife. Mm-hmm. We get also a shelter allowance of $821. So we have to use the rest for if we need groceries. We also, if we live in an apartment, we need insurance. Mm-hmm. Also, you need something to a mobility for life, like for example, a phone, mm-hmm. and the internet too, because most now every month we have to make reports of our income as well. Like if we still have to make reports on our income, so we need internet. So that's another expense. So it's not getting any better. I know a couple of the opposition parties in Ontario are asking for double the ODSP, but the current government is expecting the Bill C-22 at the federal level will help this, but it's going to be over a year before that kicks in. They just had the third reading today, and they still have to negotiate with the provinces if there's going to be any clawbacks or not, and how much is actually the amount that they're going to top it up with.
But it seems... both levels of government are aware of this issue in terms of the province and the federal government, and they're conceding it's an issue, but it seems like they have been dragging their feet in terms of getting the work done or kind of passing it off to the other level of government here.
Quite right. It's and during the pandemic, the value for people with disabilities have been dramatically decreased. Everyone else seems to be getting their money, including the horse industry in Ontario. They were getting $2,500 a horse during COVID, and we were getting $300 for the first three. Well, we got $300 for 3 months, and that's it. And it's created another pandemic, which people are considering is unfortunately made.
When we talk about those increased expenses, everybody has been experiencing those, but when you are on a fixed income, it does become you become more vulnerable to some of those cost sways.
Yeah, it also affects your mental health, and it's just a compounding thing. What are you not going to pay this month? Or are you going to go hungry? Are you going to... It's essentials of life that it's really affecting everybody.
And basics, I think that everybody can understand on that aspect too. Is your message, John, just to to the feds and to the provincial government, to the Ford government, is it just get on it here, just do something?
Yeah. Get off your butts and do something. Stop going pointing fingers and stop. We need this fixed now, not a year from now. We need it now.
We'll leave it there for today. But, John, thank you so much for your time on this. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Redden's a local advocate here in Ottawa, also a recipient himself of ODSP. And we have seen just cost rises in terms of fixed incomes. I can't even imagine some of these numbers that you're looking at here. What is this? Yeah, $1,178 a month. I don't know who can live on that. 4:46. This is Ottawa Now. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Christy Cameron. But continuing our food conversation in another light coming up at the top of the hour. Also, still have to get to our question of the day. That's still coming as well. I can buy myself flowers,
write my name in the sand. This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, 4:51. This is Ottawa Now. I'm Andrew Pinson in for Christy Cameron this afternoon. It's getting darker out there, and it is going to get colder as well, as you heard from Matt. So make sure you're prepared out there if you're heading out, particularly if you're heading outside, as it is going to be frigid for the next few days. When it comes to Operation Come Home, very valuable charity here in the city, It is canceling its $24 challenge for this year. The initiative, of course, you've heard in the past, talks about kind of highlighting food insecurity in the city and the cost of poverty by living off just $24 worth of food for a week. And joining us to talk about this move from Operation Come Home is John Heckbert. He is their executive director. John, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
And I know this was kind of, you know, off again and on again over the pandemic as well. So just when it comes to the $24 challenge, I guess, what was the reason why you decided it wasn't best to move forward this year?
Well, it's becoming increasingly unrealistic, unfortunately. We always ask people to see if they could do groceries for themselves with $24, right, beginning of the week, and see if they could make it to the end of the week having spent only that. And, you know, frankly, when we had looked at the feasibility of it, we floated the idea on social to see if people were interested in signing up. But it became evident when we were trying to plan it through as an event that it's just not possible anymore. Like, you just can't make it.
And as much as that is a, you know, bad news for Operation Come Home, just how much is that, how important is that to the message that you guys often spread is, you know, how food insecurity affects our community, seeming so that even, you know, a challenge that you've done for years is now just, you know, out of reach.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. We serve youth that are experiencing homelessness or have just recently ended their experience with homelessness and are trying to get back on their feet. And, you know, for them, a lot of the times they're working with allowances and social assistance and that sort of thing. Or they're working in, you know, very low income, part-time kind of jobs to kind of get settled. And so, you know, they're working with very small budgets. This year, as I'm sure you've heard before, it's been really, really tough. It's tough to pay the grocery bill. Not only is it the case that, you know, everything is more expensive than it was before and that, you know, $20, $24 goes a lot less far than it used to, but a lot of the staple goods that they tend to rely on are also more expensive now, eggs and oatmeal and that sort of thing. And so it is concerning. I think that's why, I mean, here in our organization, we're a partner with the food bank. We distribute food bank food, and demand has just gone right up. Like, we can't keep enough food in the building to help the youth that we serve. And there's more youth coming now than there has been, you know, in recent memory. Like, it's quite something.
And in terms of food bank usage, you know, something that we're hearing across the country as well. And, you know, even when I go to the grocery store, for what I think are staples, you know, I end up walking out, you know, scratching my head in terms of how did I just spend that much money. So for those on the street or, you know, experiencing homelessness or just coming out of homelessness, you know, how difficult can that be when you're just trying to get on your feet and you can't even afford the essentials, even though you're doing your best?
Yeah, no, it unfortunately gets to be something that, you know, people have to eat less and you know, string together whatever they can to kind of make it through. We know that a lot of our youth are eating fewer meals and skipping meals in some cases, especially near the end of the month or whatever, because they're just out of money. They just can't make it anymore. And so we're doing everything we can to help that, but it's tough and it has a long-term consequence. You know, if you're a young person and you're trying to get on your feet and you're working with our employment workers here, or you're trying to get your high school completed here in the school that we have, and you can't, I mean, it's hard to stay level-headed when you're on an empty stomach and you hadn't had enough to eat the night before even, right? So, you know, we do hot meals, we do food bank, we offer snacks, and we're going to keep doing that. And yeah, hopefully with some of the work that we're doing now, we can raise enough to keep that going all year long.
And you know, as you mentioned, you know, there is hope out there, but hope doesn't pay the bills at the end of the day. Just, I know you guys run the drop-in center as well for youth. Is that something that's still, you know, accessible for anybody who's kind of experiencing some of these issues right now?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Through the drop-in, we do morning and evening. So we do 8:30 to 11:30 in the morning. We have the drop-in from 4 o'clock until 8 o'clock at night. It's running right behind me here in case you hear any background noise or whatever. We do hot meals, you know, hot breakfast, hot dinner. We serve them up. The drop-in has been at capacity, like we have been full, essentially since November. And the food is a big part of the demand. We clean out of the meals every night. You know, we usually make about 30, 35 meals for the youth. And so those are gone. And then, you know, they're also taking our snacks with them. We do granola bars, we do, you know, apples, pears, whatever we can get kind of thing, fresh foods and whatnot. And so, yeah, we're having trouble keeping up with what's out there in terms of need, but so far so good. We're going to keep going.
Yeah, and we do know we have a great community that does like to give back. If there was anything that, you know, Operation Come Home was in need of, you know, monetary donations or anything else, where's the best place for people to kind of find that?
So definitely people can find us on our website, operationcomehome.ca, and they can make a donation there if they want to give cash. If they want to donate items, we take personal care products all the time, you know, shampoo, conditioner, tampons, shaving supplies, all that sort of thing. If they have snacks that they can donate, granola bars or prepackaged foods or whatever, we will absolutely accept those too. So they can come by 150 Gloucester. It's right around the corner from a bank in Laurier. They can drop off anytime between 8 in the morning and 8 at night. So, and we will, you know, happily accept what people have to donate.
And thank you for getting that message out there and for the work that you do, John. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time today.
Right on. Thank you.
John Heckbert's the executive director of Operation Come Home. They've canceled their $24 challenge for this year, so living for a week on $24 worth of groceries. Turns out it's not feasible, as I'm sure many of you can empathize with. But for those at the kind of lower rungs of our society in terms of trying to, you know, make do and get by, it's very difficult right now. And it's a setback for many. But as John mentioned, 150 Gloucester. If you can make a donation, even if it's just personal care items for some homeless youth experiencing or youth experiencing homelessness here in Ottawa, I should say, you can make a donation there as well. Check out Operation Come Home's website. Text here says, 416 completely stopped just south of Roger Stevens. Going south. So just south of Roger Stevens, southbound on the 416, just getting word that traffic is completely stopped. Just if you're out there, just a warning. If you can't avoid it, do avoid it. If you see what's slowing traffic down, also let us know. Text us 580-580. You can also tweet us at CFRA Ottawa. Take a quick break for the news and check on traffic. We'll come back with our question of the day. It's Groundhog Day. I haven't thrown this out yet. What's the one day you wish you'd want to do over and over again on this February 2nd Groundhog Day? The one day you wish you'd want to do over and over again. We'll also continue our food conversation coming up next hour as well. It's 5 o'clock, time for the news. We'll be right back here on Ottawa Now.